Now, our next reading comes from page 66 of the Big Book. It is plain that a life which includes deep resentment leads only to futility and unhappiness. To the precise extent that we permit these, do we squander the hours that might have been worthwhile. But with the alcoholic, whose hope is the maintenance and growth of a spiritual experience, this business of resentment is grave. We found that it is fatal. When harbouring such feelings, we shut ourselves off from the sunlight of the spirit. The insanity of alcohol returns and we drink again. And with us, to drink is to die. From chapter 5, How It Works, page 66. It's my honour to introduce our friend Peter T from Melbourne, Australia, to speak for 15 minutes.
Thank you, Jody. My name's Peter. I'm an alcoholic. I'm extremely grateful to be here. I'd like to thank the committee for asking me to share. Just want to start a clock over here so I know exactly where I'm at. I have a sobriety date, 15 June 1991. I'm pretty happy about that. I'm a member of the Melbourne Men's Group. Most of you people are welcome. Please come and visit us, like Jody said, when we're back out of lockdown. This is a great topic. I really enjoyed Ken. I've enjoyed the speakers this morning. It really has been a fantastic conference, and I'm a little bit overwhelmed. I'm speaking in front of people who are my absolute heroes, and I feel a little bit overwhelmed by that. Just to let you know, I am an alcoholic. I love the effect produced by alcohol. Just to let you know exactly what alcohol did for me, well, alcohol did for me what a phone box did for Clark Kent. Probably don't need to know anything more about why I drank. That's why I drank. And I guess I'm the kind of guy that fits those couple of questions in the basic textbook of Alcoholics Anonymous. If when you honestly want or you cannot quit entirely, or if when drinking you have little control over the amount you take once you start, then you're probably an alcoholic. Well, that's me. I can quit, but entirely is a completely different word that I don't relate to when I'm trying to stay stopped. I know about the allergic reaction to alcohol. When I drink, I lose control. But the book outlines that the main problem that I suffer from centers in my mind rather than in my body, because it's my mind that always leads me back to drink against my will. Described as insanity in the second step, that I suffer from the inability to see the true from false, and that lack of proportion, the ability to think straight. My mind is totally sensible and well-balanced in most areas of my life, but where alcohol is concerned, there's something, seems to be something missing. I can believe a lie, and I believe a lie that this time it's going to be different, and I start drinking again. So the textbook tells me that the solution to this problem, and Dr. Silkworth talks about it, is that I need to experience an entire psychic change. And that entire psychic change is that spiritual awakening or spiritual experience, but it both equates to the same thing, that somehow I have a personality change sufficient to recover from alcoholism. And Bill talked about that my main problem was that I lack power. I don't have the power to stop that from happening. A lot of people talk about unmanageable being when they're drinking, but unmanageable for me happens when I'm sober, and I can't manage an effective mental defense against that. And it tells me that the main purpose of the book is to enable me to find that power. And once I find the power, that power will solve my problem. And my problem is that I have this obsession to drink, this thought that leads me back to drink against my will. And the book starts to allude where I'm going to find that power. I don't need to look outside. I don't need to go into churches. I don't need to go seeking too far to find it. He talks about, he uses a number of different hints and words in the book and phrases that lead me to where that power is. He talked about the deep down in every man, woman and child is a fundamental idea of God, you know. And in my case, it was obscured by calamity, by pomp, by worship of other things. I was blocked off from this power. It talks about the fact that, God was a part of my makeup. You know, he talked about the great reality is deep down within, this vital sixth sense. So God's a part of me. It's a part of my makeup. You know, Chuck said that I'm already everything that I'm ever going to be, and that what I'm looking for, I'm looking with. You know, God is a part of my makeup. And I believe that I came into this world and I was born perfect, pure and whole, but along the way I gathered stuff I don't need. And that the 12-step process for me is a process of uncovering, discovering and discarding, is to try and remove the blockages that blocks me off from my innermost self, from this God that's within, from this vital sixth sense that's a part of my makeup, my conscience. We call it God consciousness. So the process is to remove the blockages. And if we talk about that, insanity is to believe a lie, and the lack of proportionate ability to think straight, that I had this insane idea that it's okay for me to drink because my mind has that imprinted into it, that's the solution to how I feel when I'm sober. Then the process of the 12 steps is to remove those blockages. And the 4-step process is a process or a tool. It's the first of which that I get to start to discover the truth. I'd started to discover the truth about the stock in trade, about my thinking. And, you know, in the foyer of the CIA building etched onto the marble wall, and it's the motto and a philosophy of the CIA, it says, "And yea, you shall know the truth, and the truth will set me free." And so what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to discover the truth. I'm trying to see where my thinking is warped, where I've made decisions based on self, which later placed me in a position to be hurt. You know, I'm a spiritually sick person. I suffer from a spiritual malady, and I used to treat that with alcohol, but now I can't treat that with alcohol. I need to treat it with something else, and it's called the 12 steps. You know, there's a lot of information out there on the internet. There are so many different workbooks. You can Google how to do a 4th step. There are guides left, right, and center. I was sharing with a friend of mine this morning that I came across a workbook that was 552 pages long of how to work the 12 steps. And that's way longer than my book is. And I come to understand that the 12 steps is not a Freudian, it's not a psychoanalytical process. It's simply just a process by which I start to get to see the truth in a fairly pragmatic sense. You know, Dr. Bob said in his last talk that he gave, or the last documented talk that he gave, and just a piece out of that, he said, let's not louse this up with Freudian complexities and things that are interesting to the scientists that have very little to do with our AA work. So the 12 steps are not psychoanalytical. I don't work anything out. I identify stuff and I start to surrender to that, and I ask it to be removed. Talks about in step 4, we talk about resentments. You know, the reading that Jody read before I started was that resentments are the number one offender. It shuts me off from the sunlight of the spirit. And I didn't think I had any resentments until I started listing them, and then I realized my whole life was run on resentments. I am a resentment machine. I am a guy that blames everybody, people, places, circumstances for why I am the way I am. It's their fault. I'm a victim. I'm a victim of things that have happened to me, and I can sing that song and you'll go out with me and we'll drink together because, you know, I've just been treated so very, very badly. But step 4 is an effort to try and look at that in a different way to see the truth about that. And if I can see the truth about that, then the truth will set me free. On page 65, Bill's example of his inventory and he has, you know, he's resentful at the cause and effects mind, and he goes through that he was resentful at Brown, the employer, the wife, etc. I understand that process. I've always used that process. You know, over the page, it takes me 6 questions to get there. I'm asked a list. I'm asked why. I'm asked where was I hurt, threatened, injured, or interfered with. But then over the page, he says to conclude that others were wrong was far as most of us ever got. And I have always concluded that others are wrong. It is their fault. They did this to me. I can write a list like that and I can gather a few people up and we can get together and look at it and think, they did what to you? That's no good. Let's go and get them. That's the way I used to solve things. But this doesn't work anymore because I understand the reason and my motivation for doing this is because if I don't, I won't recover from alcoholism. These resentments shut me off from the sunlight of the spirit. When I have resentment, I'm no longer sitting in the sunlight and bathing in the sunlight of the spirit. I'm blocked off from that innermost self, from that God that's within. I had a resentment against a scout master. He was a little too friendly. And, you know, and it affected all areas of my life. But, you know, what the book tells me that I need to do, it's whether these resentments are justified or unjustified, whether they are fancied or real, the only question that I need to ask myself is, am I a person that can tolerate living with resentments? and I am clearly not. Because when I'm in resentment, I get shut off from the sunlight of the Spirit. I am blocked off from God. The insanity returns. I become restless, irritable, and discontent again. And sooner or later, I wind up going down for the old solution of drinking. So he talks about that. I now have to look at this from a different angle. I need to start to think about that some of these people who wronged me, they may have been spiritually sick just like me. Them, like ourselves, were spiritually sick too. He threw a prayer in there before he gets me to have a look at the last column of that inventory, and he said that I need to see these people as sick people. He said, we ask God to help us show them the same tolerance, patience, and pity that we would cheerfully grant a sick friend. And in the first manuscript, he followed that up, a friend who had cancer. Person who had cancer, would I treat them badly? Would I be nasty to them? No. I come to understand that the people who wronged me, you know, they were doing the best they could. It's not their fault. And for me to hold a resentment against somebody who is clearly spiritually sick like me is expecting them to do better when they cannot do better. They're doing as best as they could. If they knew better, they would do better. I am like sitting there expecting a guy who has no legs to be able to run 100 meters. He can't. He's incapable of being able to do that. So when I get to that last column and I'm prepared to look at it from an entirely different angle, looking disregarding the other person involved, absolutely, I'm asked to see, well, where am I at fault? Where have I been dishonest, selfish, and self-seeking? But most of the time I'm dishonest, I can't see the truth. Most of the time I'm not considering them, I'm only thinking about myself. This is always all about me. But when I can see the truth in that last column, and the only thing that motivates me to see it from an entirely different angle is going back to the explosive propellant of step one, then that enables me to look at it. And we talk about that this is where the pivot happens. This is where the 180-degree shift comes. I go from being a victim to being a person who takes responsibility for who I am and what's happened throughout my life and for what I've done to others. He goes into fears. He talks about fears. I'm riddled with fears. He says, I don't have one. I have hundreds of fears. Most of my fears are, well, I can have fear of police and fear of the tax department, but I probably need to stop cheating the tax department, and I need to probably stop doing things that's causing the police to take notice of what I'm doing. But I have a lot of other fears. These are unrealistic fears, but they're very real to me. Fear of the future, fear of financial insecurity, fear that I'll be rejected, fear that you won't like me, fear that this is not going to go well, fear that I'll never have a relationship and all the rest of it. Most of my fears are caused by the fact that somehow I think that I've been granted the ability to look into a crystal ball, and I look into it and I never see good things in that crystal ball, and I always project into the future, and I live with how I think things are going to be. And the panel this morning, they talked about, you know, that God is everything or he is nothing. The how and why of it is that I need to stop playing God, and the why was because it didn't work. The answer to my fears is that if I'm in the right here and the right now, I'm okay at the moment. I don't need to be concerned about these things. Fear is false evidence appearing real, and when I head off into that realm of believing I know what's going to happen, projecting an outcome to a situation I've got no idea about, I have all sorts of fear. So has self-reliance failed me? Absolutely, 100% it's failed me. What do I need to do? I need to trust God. And if I trust God, I will at once outgrow fear. And where is God? God is, may you find him now. It doesn't say may you find him in a few minutes or next week or a little later today. He says, may you find God now. So if I need to continue to look at fears. If I have fear, I know where it's coming from. The manifestation of fear will be I'm either doing something that I shouldn't be and amends that I need to make, or I'm certainly looking into that crystal ball. The sex inventory, very quickly, there's 9 questions, but I guess the most important question, I get to review my conduct and my behavior over my life, and I get to try and get to a point where what should I have done instead? And from what should I have done instead in every incident, I guess that tapers down into trying to find a sane and sound ideal for my future conduct. I use that as a template for who I don't want to be in the future. This is not the same, the ideal woman I'm looking for. This is about my behavior in relationships going forward. Is it selfish or not? The fifth step, it's a really tough step. It's a ego deflating step. It's a step that causes me that I think I've done well enough for solitary self-appraisal. I think I've done a fantastic job with that, but he says I need to go further. And again, Ken talked about that. If I'm not prepared to share all this stuff, if I want to hang on to some of the worst items in stock, I'm not going to recover from the disease of alcoholism. I need to be entirely, again, that word, honest with somebody if I expect to live long and happily in this world. And you know what? Again, my fifth step was driven by my first step. Everything comes back to the first step, because the first step is that motivation that helps me to do those things. When I shared my fifth step, I had that amazing feeling that things had been lifted. I had a guy who didn't fall off. He was kind enough to turn his head when he yawned. He wasn't affected by what I did. He shared stuff with me. He told me, yeah, I'd done that too. And you know what? We can call that experimentation. And he shared things with me that made it easy for me to get through that process. I got 1 minute to go, and I'll finish with a story. I've sponsored a lot of guys, and I'm really grateful for that. I love the guys I sponsor. I've learned more in sponsorship and helping other people than I have in any other activity. By helping guys through this process, it always comes back to me. I always see me in those other guys. I've never heard anything that I've not heard from others or that I haven't done myself. And I always, in Melbourne, I take the guys down to a spot and park my car, and we go through this process. And a little while ago, I lined up a Sunday morning catch up with a guy. We were going to go down, sit by the river and share a fifth step. And I'd locked it in. And when I lock it in, I want to get it done. I want to get it done in that one sitting and get that guy through that process. And my family, after we made that decision, they came up with this idea. Look, we're going to go down to Geelong tomorrow. Everybody's going to go down there. We need you to come with us. And I thought, oh, look, I've got this thing to do first thing in the morning, but I'll finish with him and then I'll come down, but I'll catch you guys down there. And I'm thinking, I don't want to miss out on Geelong, but I really want to have this experience with this guy, get him through the process. So I thought, well, I'm going to ring him up. I'm going to try him out. I want to see what willingness looks like. I want to see if he was really willing to go the length. I said to him, mate, I said, look, I've got something on tomorrow, but I'm really happy to help you and I still want to help you. Are you prepared to get there a little early? And he said, well, what's a little early? And I said, how's 4 o'clock? So we met at 4 o'clock in the morning. We're parked in this car park and my window's facing east. I've got the light on in the car and he's sitting there reading through his inventory and I'm being the good sponsor, turning my head when I yawn. And little bit by little bit, we're going through the process. And it was great. And as we're going through, the time's getting past and all of a sudden the sun starts to come up. And as the sun's coming up and I've turned the interior lights off and I've said to him that what we're doing here is exactly the reading that Jody gave me, is that we're trying to access and uncover and discover the sunlight and to remove the blockages. And the metaphor of that with the sun coming in through our window was just a magic moment. It was something that I'll never forget. This is a process that I have loved. I love the work. I love helping other guys. And it's been an extreme privilege to be asked to share. And I'll leave it there. Thanks, Joe.
Thank you so much, my friend. Great to hear you. Great share.